Thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Bob Kinzel, co-host of Vermont Edition. Just wanted to let you know that this has been edited for brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Novel coronavirus cases in Vermont continue to rise. There is community spread happening among people who either don't know they have the virus or suspect they might but aren't being tested. Over the weekend, new cases were reported, including several at a care home in Burlington, where one elderly resident has already died. Governor Phil Scott has continued to place restrictions on what businesses can stay open during this time and how. Gymnasiums, fitness centers, hair and nail salons and barbers, spas and tattoo parlors all have to close by 8 p.m. today. And the state is restricting mass gatherings to 10 people or fewer. Today on Vermont Edition, we're going to get an update on what's been happening over the weekend with Vermont's health department. And then we'll be joined by the chief medical officer at Gifford Medical Center in Randolph, who can help answer your questions about prevention, protection, and what to do if you think you're developing symptoms, plus how his hospital is protecting staff and patients. Tracy Dolan is deputy health commissioner for the state of Vermont, and she's here with us now. Deputy Commissioner, thank you very much for sparing some time with us. I know it's a very busy day.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Jane. No, I'm glad to be here.
So you usually update numbers a little bit later than now. So what can you tell us about what's known right now, at least, in terms of the number of confirmed cases in the state?
Sure. So we're continuing to see a rise in cases as we expected. Our website will be updated about 1 o'clock, but we have 75 positive cases as of today, and those are numbers as of midnight last night. And we have unfortunately seen a rise in fatalities as well, and we have 3 new deaths reported over the last couple of days.
Oh, that's terrible news. 75 confirmed cases as of midnight and 3 new fatalities, 3 new deaths. I'm so sorry to hear that news. Can you tell us anything about that is available for public knowledge?
Sure, yeah. So we already had 2 fatalities, as you knew, and one of those was at Burlington Health and Rehab, and we did have an outbreak there, and so unfortunately 3 others passed at that location, and we're working very quickly now to for the safety of the residents there. We've been working with CDC over the last few days. We had a team work with that facility, and we're quickly putting things into place to try to put a cap on it as quickly as we can.
I was going to ask you about Burlington Health and Rehab, and so let me just confirm with you, Deputy Commissioner. You said all 3 of the new fatalities were residents at that care home?
Yes.
Oh, yes, okay. And what are you doing to put a cap on that? We knew as of, I think, Sunday that there had been 12 confirmed cases, including the one resident who had earlier been reported to have died. How many cases are there now at that facility?
Sure. So the cases at that facility, sorry, I don't have the number of cases at that facility in front of me, so I'll have to get back to you on that. But I believe you noted that there were several that were tested positive over the weekend. I'm not sure what our total count is there. But we have a team that worked with the facility. We had CDC, several calls with CDC. They reviewed this outbreak. We're finding these outbreaks across the country in long-term care facilities and facilities like this. And so they advised us and, told us that we were doing as well as we could in this situation. And so we are looking now at taking some extra measures today to possibly move some residents out of that facility. I think that's happening today in order to try to stem the tide there.
The people who will be moving out of the facility, are they people who are suspected or confirmed to have cases, or are these people who are suspected to still be healthy?
I won't be able to confirm that for privacy reasons, but some folks will be moved out.
I see. I guess in terms of strategy, so I know that you can't reveal certain things, but in terms of the strategy for protecting people who live there, is the strategy to isolate people who are sick, or is the strategy to isolate people who are well and move people who are sick around to different places? If you know, what can you say about that?
I think we can say both, that we're trying to isolate people who are sick in any environment, which then by definition means we're moving people who are well away from them. So it might be a 2-pronged strategy.
Mm. So you said you don't have updated numbers, but on Sunday, the numbers of confirmed cases, I believe, were 52. And now as of midnight, you're saying that the number is 75. And again, new numbers should come out. We're broadcasting live in the noon hour. New numbers should be out around 1 or 2 on the health department website. And so the expectation is that that will rise above 75. Is it safe to...
No, I'm sorry. I should be clear. You asked me what number were positive at Burlington Health and Rehab right now, and I didn't have that specific number. But the number that you will see this afternoon is 75, and that number was accurate as of midnight.
Got it. So the number that was accurate as of midnight is 75. That's the number that will be posted at 1 p.m. on the Health Department's website.
Yes.
Got it. And you don't have updated numbers on Burlington Health and Rehab. However, are some of those new cases at the facility? So it is still a growing problem there?
I won't be able to speak to that, I'm afraid. But I can tell you that overall we have 75. But I won't be able to speak to how many of those are at Burlington Health and Rehab.
How are people who work at that facility being protected?
So we have a team working to ensure that we got an extra supply of protective equipment in there twice in the last week. And our team is working with their team to ensure and double check that all of the right measures are taken in terms of gowning up and using the equipment appropriately. We've reviewed workflow. And again, we had CDC look carefully at this case. And again, CDC is looking carefully at these kinds of cases in many states, and we're all sharing information as quickly as we can.
Let's go to Sasha, who's calling in from Plainfield. Hi, Sasha. Go right ahead.
Hey, good morning. I'm also the Emergency Management Director for Plainfield, and I'd like us to think in Vermont about us being a leader in changing language ever so slightly and talking about physical distancing rather than social distancing. I think what we are aware of is that social connections, which can be made in many ways that don't involve physical contact, are really important in terms of health and resilience. And it's a little confusing to people when we talk about social distancing, when really what we're asking them to do for themselves and for the rest of the community is to maintain physical distancing. I know that's not what's being used nationally, but I think we could be a leader in that regard and help people use a language that would actually be a little bit more helpful and sustaining.
Sasha, thanks for your call. Appreciate hearing from you in Plainfield. And Tracy Dolan, one of the things that happened over the weekend was that Governor Scott further restricted businesses, especially businesses that really can't do the business at all without being in very close contact. So tattoo parlors, nail and hair salons and barbers, also gyms and fitness centers. But also the governor said we're going to be restricting mass gatherings to 10 people or fewer. Now, Sasha is saying one thing that might be helpful to people is instead of saying social isolation, to say physical distancing from one another, but that might allow people to still feel like they can be socially connected through other means. You know, I don't know if you have a thought on that, Deputy Commissioner, or at least on this question of are Vermonters taking this seriously enough and actually doing enough physical distancing to help stem the tide?
Well, I can address the second point first. I think Vermonters are taking this really seriously. I can say in my community, when I look around in the various communities I'm part of here in Vermont, in my work community, I'm seeing people take extraordinary efforts to physically and socially distance themselves from each other. The kind of behavior change that we've asked for from people in a matter of days is unprecedented. We're asking people to fundamentally change, in many cases, their own human nature around who they socialize with and who they touch and how they reach out. And I have been so impressed how seriously people are taking it. I was out shopping this weekend. I found people gave me a wide berth. I'm finding that a lot of the young people, and I know people are calling out a lot of the young people saying that they're not paying attention. I can tell you that the young people that I'm in touch with really are taking it seriously. We can do more for sure, but we've got a lot of power here. You know, we can help stop the spread. We can't eliminate the spread, but we can certainly reduce it and reduce the impact on the healthcare system right now by taking it very seriously. Hand washing and the social distancing, really staying home unless you need to go out for essential services, and then coming back, washing hands before you leave, washing hands when you get back. So I do think people are taking it seriously. And I think if you want to call it physical distancing, that's fine too. We're using the CDC language because that's consistent for us. But I do understand the caller's point about the importance of being socially connected, which might be different than being physically connected near each other.
Let's go to Nathaniel in Waitsfield. Hi, Nathaniel. You have a question?
Yes, I do. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, why did the department stop reporting cases differentiated by Vermont resident and non-residents? And can you confirm that the new positive test results that you're reporting now includes both residents and non-residents, or are there potentially non-residents that have tested positive in Vermont that are not being reported? Thank you.
Yep. Thanks for the call, Nathaniel. What can you tell us, Tracy Dolan?
Sure. We're reporting one consolidated number. Initially, when we first started reporting, we did see what looked like a disproportionate number of out-of-state people testing positive in Vermont. And now, of course, as we anticipated, because we have spread within Vermont, just like every other state, the vast majority of our positives are Vermonters. Here in New England, we have a lot of people flowing between borders, and so we anticipate that we're sometimes going to have non-residents as well. But we are reporting all people who are in Vermont who are reporting positive. And I checked in with the deputy commissioners in other states, and they're doing the same thing. We recognize that there might be some people from out of state, but that is all part of that one consolidated number.
Is there any concern that people who perhaps have second homes in Vermont or families in Vermont but live elsewhere in places where there are larger outbreaks may be coming to the state? I'm hearing this, and so I wanted to get a state perspective on what you're doing and thinking about this, that people may be coming from, for example, places like New York City to get away from an area that is currently more heavily impacted and perhaps bringing cases that they don't know they have yet here.
Sure. I don't have an official number on that, but certainly we're hearing concerns from communities as well, people feeling like those from neighboring states are coming in to be in their second homes to get away. I think we all have to recognize that this is moving through our country. If it's not in a particular area yet, it's probably a matter of time, and we could be territorial, or we could do what we always do here in Vermont and throughout the region, which is recognize that we care for whoever shows up. That's what's happening to Vermonters in other states, and that's what's happening here as well.
In Lebanon, Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center announced that its new in-house test infrastructure can test up to 1,000 tests a day, but they're limited by the number of test kits and all of the things that go into the test kits, and by a lack of protective personal equipment for healthcare workers. What's happening in Vermont?
Sure. So we are suffering the same shortages, both in terms of test kits and test supplies and protective personal equipment. And so we've been working hard trying to talk to the feds. We are on the phone with the White House and Health and Human Services on a daily basis. FEMA has stepped in. So we had CDC leading the charge, which was appropriate. They know pandemics. FEMA has stepped in because they have a lot of skills in moving equipment and logistics. And so a few days ago, we were on a call, and it was explained that FEMA will take a larger role. We understand, I think I got an email at 1 o'clock in the morning, Friday morning, saying that they will have supplies out to all the states. And so we're waiting for that. We've had some supplies here in Vermont in our own strategic national stockpile. So Vermont has its own allotment of that. We've been getting those supplies out to our highest priorities, which are hospitals, EMS, and long-term care facilities. It's not everyone. It's not adequate. And we are also disappointed in that. And we're doing everything we can to push the feds for the equipment we need and the test supplies we need. But we are able to test now the highest priority patients, and we're also expanding testing with the partnership with UVM and also in partnership with commercial labs. So we are getting more tests out than we were before and getting more results back.
Do you expect that we will get to a point where we'll be able to test everyone?
I don't know about that. Nobody has yet. I understand Finland tried a pretty significant outreach and got upwards of 10 to 20% of their population tested, but I haven't heard a place where everyone's been tested yet. I don't know that we've ever done that for any communicable or infectious disease, but that would be great, and we certainly would like to do more health surveillance to understand more about what we're facing and to be able to plan for it better.
How are you, in the meantime, testing healthcare workers and their families to try to make sure that healthcare workers who may be coming in contact are either taking the appropriate steps and quarantining when necessary, or are clear to continue doing their jobs?
Sure. Well, when we get a positive result, particularly one that's been hospitalized or in touch with a healthcare worker, we speak to them, we speak to the healthcare system that treated them, and we find out which healthcare workers were in contact, and we are doing contact tracing with a focus on healthcare workers. Those workers are either tested if they're symptomatic or they're asked to monitor their symptoms if they're asymptomatic at this time. In order to make sure that if they are symptomatic that they go home and they isolate for a period of 14 days or until they're better. For those who are in contact, but don't have symptoms. Different healthcare systems are handling it differently, but because we need to keep people in the system, keep healthcare workers active in order to support the patient population, in some cases they are checking symptoms daily, and if any symptoms occur, particularly fever, they are then asked to isolate.
What are the worst case scenarios and the modeling that the state is working on? Last week at a press conference, one of Governor Scott's press conference, it was stated that the models are being worked out for what the worst case might look like in Vermont. With or without the models, how is the health department preparing for that?
So we're preparing for more widespread transmission. We know it's out there. We're preparing particularly for the hit on the healthcare system. And so we've got hospital surge working groups working closely with hospitals. We're trying to select some places for some mobile hospitals to handle that surge. We're also trying to handle the surge in the demand for testing. We're continuing to put out more messaging and trying to prepare to see what we need to do further to limit contact with the social distancing. There are only so many arrows in our quiver right now, and we're trying to utilize all of them. We know that if we do this early and we do this in a very strong way, it can help reduce the impact. And I think Vermonters are doing a really good job, and we have a lot of power, right? You can stay home, you can wash your hands, you can go out for essentials, and please don't buy everything in the store. There are a lot of things that we can do and that we are doing, and I think the push now is to stay with that and to not let up. I think the tendency will be to let up. I mean, it's only been a few days, and it's a lot. It's a lot if you have kids. It's a lot if you don't have kids. And it's a lot for you not to be able to go to work. There's a huge economic hardship here. So I think it's, how are we going to sustain this? How are we going to keep people solid in the understanding that this is going to take a little while, and then we're going to have to reassess?
That's Tracy Dolan, Vermont's Deputy Health Commissioner. Thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Jane.
Let's go to Amanda, who's with us from Tunbridge, Vermont. Hi, Amanda.
So I'm a parts delivery driver in Vermont. I drive all over the state, and I can tell you that everyone I've met, except for three people, are not following the physical distancing. And it's really unnerving. I mean, myself and my boyfriend are trying to stay as far away as we can from people, but everyone else, like I said, except for three people, three different businesses I've seen have closed their doors to any customers, but no one's following it. I had a guy all over me in the grocery store. Same with the cashier. She was all over me, and it's really unnerving. And no one's taking it seriously as far as I see. It's scary.
Amanda, you said you deliver for a living. What kinds of things do you deliver?
Car parts.
I see. So you're delivering direct to businesses.
Yep.
Yeah. And you're not seeing it even in the businesses that you deliver to?
There's only three businesses. They've put signs up on all of their doors saying, do not come in. Someone will meet you outside. And I deliver to about 20 different businesses regularly. They change throughout the day.
Amanda, you mentioned that you are taking this seriously, and you and your boyfriend are trying to physically isolate from other people as much as possible. When you're thinking about this, you know, when you're not delivering, what are your concerns or what are the bright spots for you?
So the current concerns are that both my boyfriend and I are immunocompromised. So we're at a higher risk of having complications if we were to contract this. And the bright spots are that I've been able to connect over the internet with a lot of friends. We just did a group watch party of a funny movie, and we all were video chatting together as well. So it was really nice to be able to at least have some contact with friends.
Well, I really appreciate you calling and sharing your perspective that you are not seeing people physically distancing themselves from one another, and you know how this is impacting your life. Amanda, thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
We just heard from Deputy Health Commissioner Tracy Dolan that the latest numbers for Vermont are 75 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in the state, including, very sadly, three new fatalities. And I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that over the course of the day. Now let's turn to one of the hospitals on the front lines in Vermont. Joshua White is Chief Medical Officer at Gifford Medical Center in Randolph. Dr. White, thanks for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Happy to be here.
Dr. White, what is the situation at Gifford right now in terms of the response to COVID-19?
We are still heavily in preparation phase. We've had a couple of our patients test positive, but no one that has required admission. And so it's a matter of using the information that other hospitals have provided regarding their experiences and trying to apply that to what we expect we'll see in the next couple of weeks.
So in terms of cases, no active cases at the hospital, but perhaps cases within the community, people who are not hospitalized, is that safe to say?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And so had Gifford actually done any advanced planning for an outbreak like this? I mean, I know you always have to deal with things like flu and other communicable diseases that might come through, but this is a different story.
We had general policies and experiences in the past going, you know, H1N1 is a good example. And then with this specifically, we had to rearrange different policies and plan for what we might experience specific to coronavirus.
Listeners, if you have a thought for us, a question, Jeanette from Bradford says, how long does the virus live on surfaces like door handles, your house or your car, steering wheels, items from grocery stores like cans and milk containers or shoes, and anything within your own home, countertops, floors, etc.? We've been hearing different things over the course of the last few weeks as more is known. So, Dr. White, what should people know now about how long this virus can live on surfaces?
So I have seen one paper on this, and the longest lasting material was plastics, and that was about 2 days. Paper or cardboard products was about 1 day, and other products was less. I can't comment on anything that would be porous or fibrous, such as fabric. I haven't seen data on that.
Jeanette also wants to know, are reusable shopping bags okay? And we're actually hearing that a lot of places are saying, don't bring in your reusable bags, or coffee shops, for example, saying, don't bring in your reusable cups.
Utilization of those would largely depend on whether or not anybody else came into contact with it. You know, how are you using them? Are other people handling them? Things of that nature. If it's something that's going to come into contact with a lot of other people, I agree, it probably should not be reused.
When the medical center is trying to figure out how to manage cases and how to manage healthcare at a time when doctors and nurses and all medical professionals need more supplies and equipment, and we're hearing that there aren't enough, does Gifford have enough supplies, you know, just in terms of masks and gowns and all of the things that people need to stay safe if they're working with patients?
No, unfortunately, we do not, although this is not a unique experience. Nobody has enough. And really, one of the things we've been conveying to our staff is, if you imagine a Venn diagram, two circles that partially overlap, There is best practice, and then there is the reality in which we live. And I would like to magic up more masks, more PPE, but until I get a hold of those, we're going to make do with what we have. And it's unfortunate because there is risk that could have been avoided, but we're going to deal with it as best we can.
When you say there is risk that could have been avoided, how?
If you compare the experience in the U.S. Relative to what has gone on in some of Southeast Asia, these are places that have had recent epidemics from various viruses, and they are much better prepared than we are. The U.S. experience has largely been that happens somewhere else perspective, and now we're discovering that that's not the reality. We live in a global society, and people move fast, and the public health infrastructure here in the U.S. is just not what it should be. And it's my hope that we will reinvest in that after this, because there are no big stockpiles of these kind of things. And anybody that's been paying attention to the finances of Vermont hospitals lately should be well aware that, you know, we're trying to pay our employees and cannot be managing stockpiles. That's the role of the federal government.
So are you angry at the federal government? Do you think this was a misstep?
I don't think I would characterize that as angry at the federal government. By and large, I think politicians do what their constituents want them to do. There's a regards to public health, there's a big debate on basic things in the U.S. Going all the way down to vaccinations. This is not historically in recent past a value for Americans, and I think that's going to change.
Can you describe to me what the communications are like in terms of how you tell personnel at the medical center what to do for personal protective equipment? You know, are you telling them reuse things? Are you saying, you know, take something home? Can you like just describe what that actually details, that communication?
So right now, one of the things we're doing is we're going to a one mask per employee per shift policy for acute services such as the emergency department. These are generally considered single-use masks. That being said, if they stay dry and you don't expose them to other people, you know, you're not leaving the mask where someone else might touch it, those kind of things, we believe we can make do with a reasonable amount of success. And that was something that has been accomplished in Southeast Asia, where they have had a bigger coronavirus experience thus far. But at the same time, we're aware that this is not the recommendations of the product manufacturers.
And that's just because you don't have enough to keep using them and tossing them and using them and tossing them.
Correct.
We got a note from Laura who wants to know about masks for non-medical personnel. Laura says, can the health experts elaborate on mask use? We're told not to use masks unless we are symptomatic, but we are also told that we may be carriers before we have symptoms. According to The Lancet, extensive use of masks like we see in Asia may be helpful in reducing spread for this very reason. Laura says, I totally get that we don't want to use masks that should be going to healthcare workers, but now that there are instructions for homemade masks all over the internet, which are not as effective as medical grade masks, but maybe better than nothing, should we not be all making and wearing our own masks?
So making your own mask is not going to take anything away from anybody, and so I can't imagine a qualm there. If you think of the original surgical mask design, this was for a surgeon who was perhaps taking out a gallbladder, and you don't want that surgeon to, you know, cough or sneeze into an open abdomen. So it was designed to stop things coming out of your mouth and nose and going elsewhere. It was not designed to stop everything you breathe in. Those are N95 masks. Because when you breathe in, if you put your hand in front of your face, the air will just flow around it to the side. So a regular mask doesn't do much to protect you from breathing in viral particles. But a regular mask will catch everything if you sneeze or cough and will protect the people around you if you're sick.
So should people who are asymptomatic, you know, but think they could be? I mean, that's that fine line, isn't it, Dr. White, where people, you know, that question of, yeah, you may not be trying to protect yourself from others, but should you be trying to protect others from you, even if you don't know if you have it?
If you're making your own mask or you're coming up with a cloth mask and you're not taking it away from medical personnel, I would say go for it.
Are you requesting masks, homemade masks from others, as some of our regional hospitals are?
We have not specifically requested them. We are accepting them. And the plan right now is to provide those to patients who come in with a cough, and that will actually reduce the burden on some of our own supplies, and we can save the medical-grade mask for our personnel.
How should people who want to donate masks in your area get them to you?
We have a couple of folks in marketing, Bethany Siloway or Ashley Lincoln are our contacts, and you can find them on our website.
What about other kinds of equipment? We've seen the call go out for people who work in other trades that might have protective equipment that could be used or changed to be used for medical equipment. Are you getting supplies in from other places?
We're getting some. We definitely need more. And so anybody that utilizes these kind of things, I would strongly request that they look through them and consider donating. What we're looking for is N95 masks. And basically, it's a designation that determines how much that particular mask will filter as far as airborne contaminants go. And it's got product utilization outside of medical situations. And so there are a lot of woodworkers, painters, contractors that may be sitting on some supply of these.
Emily is on the line with us from Winooski. Emily, hi. Go right ahead.
I was actually wondering, everybody wants a timeline on this, but I was wondering because it was the coronavirus has been compared so often to the flu and influenza, and due to the nature that it is viral, I'm wondering if it applies to like a flu season, and if it's, I don't know, like it started in January in China, and maybe it's like fortunate that it didn't hit America, and like when it did, I don't know about the timeline of being like along the lines of a flu season.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Emily. Dr. White, there's been some conflicting information coming out about whether or not there might be a COVID-19 season, whether this is a seasonal illness, even from the president who suggested as much that it might go away in the spring as the weather warms up. What do we know so far about that?
So that's unclear, and largely just because no one's experienced this before, and any answers up to this point are theoretical, no matter who you hear them from, because it's new. There is really good evidence that this is moving through warmer and colder areas, such that I don't believe that we can reasonably expect a season, but again, that's a guess on my part. I do not think this is going to go away, and that has been consistent. If you look at epidemiological predictions in terms of where it's going to go, warmer weather has not stopped it. I think given the rate of infection, it would be reasonable to expect that this is going to become endemic to the population and fade in the background to some degree. But what exactly that's going to look like, I don't know.
Paul is calling in from Bridport. Hi, Paul. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane, and hi, Dr. White. Thank you. I hope my comment isn't inappropriate at this point. I've been hiking the last couple of, it was over the weekend, and saw what people were doing with regards to social distancing, and it seems that many people perhaps are still not getting it, and especially perhaps with regard to their dogs. Where I've been hiking is up Snake Mountain, which I'm sure you know, and these folks are used to letting their dogs run. They've got their hands all over their dogs, and then they unleash them, and they go. And as I came down the trail, they would come up, and they would jump up on me. And it makes it impossible to be out if people just aren't aware of the other possible ways of transmitting the virus.
Paul, thanks for the call. Dr. White, you know, what about these sort of inadvertent ways people may not be being as careful as they think they are?
That's actually a very important point. I do know there was at least one reported case where a dog contracted this, so it's theoretically possible that people's dogs could be transferring COVID-19. A lot of the social distancing is very easy to cut corners, that if people are out, they really need to stay apart. The connections that seem so minor on a day-to-day basis, the play dates with friends because the kids are home from school, or the beer with a buddy because you're both off work, those things result in increased disease transmission.
So people should be paying attention, even if they're out and keeping 6 feet from one another. That includes 6 feet of all of the things that you're touching from one another.
As a general rule, yes, that's a good idea.
Let's go to Joe, who's with us from Glens Falls, New York. Hi, Joe.
Hi there. Hey, doctor. Thanks for all your help. Question, what about those people who get over it? Are they still infectious to others?
Thanks for that call. What do you think, Dr. White?
For a short period of time, that is definitely going to be true. You're going to start to feel better while you are still shedding virus, and that's true for most diseases, if not all. The long-lasting immunity to this is still a little bit unclear. We don't know at what rate people are going to be able to reacquire this, and it probably has to do with how much this virus mutates as it's out in the human reserve. There is some evidence that it's mutating already, and so we will definitely see this make the rounds.
So can I stop and clarify that again? So we don't know yet, then, whether getting the virus will confer at least a short-term immunity. Is that correct? So that's just not known?
it's reasonable to assume that there will be at least some short-term immunity, although to what degree and how protective that is unclear.
And then in terms of how long you should plan to stay away if you think you have the virus, whether it's confirmed or not, you know, again, you said people are going to start to feel better while they're still shedding the virus. But what is a reasonable approach to keeping yourself completely isolated if you think you have it?
I would suggest going at least 3 days beyond the period where you might have a cough or fever, and if possible, extend it beyond that. The general recommendations thus far have been 14 days, and we have seen a pretty good response in places that have flattened the curve with that.
Yeah, and that 14 days is often, you know, 14-day quarantine if you think you've been exposed, because that's how long it might take to get the symptoms. But that's also a good approach to, if you think you have symptoms, to wait 14 days before, you know, being sort of out in even small P public again?
Yes.
And in terms of, you know, how you would know when you're done with a cough, coughs can last, you know, 3-4 weeks. So are you just mean like the real heavy part of the symptoms?
If you feel like you have COVID-19, which soon enough is going to apply to almost everybody, and particularly in light of the general social distancing recommendations anyways, and you're still coughing for 3 to 4 weeks, I would advise that you stay home for 3 to 4 weeks.
We're talking with Dr. Joshua White, Chief Medical Officer at Gifford Medical Center in Randolph. And if you have questions, again, you can share them with us by calling 800-639-2211. Dr. White, like most hospitals, you put in place new visitor rules that went into effect on March 20th, and they severely restrict people who are able to come to the hospital to visit loved ones, you know, including people who may not be able to visit their loved ones who have gotten surgery. Can you talk a little bit more about the thinking in restricting visitor access?
So this is particularly important, and I'm very glad that the governor went forth with this, because if you consider healthcare institutions, they are about to become coronavirus or COVID central. So if you think about the places where you are most likely to run into a coronavirus carrier and most likely to pick up coronavirus, those are hospitals and healthcare institutions. And frankly, anybody that does not have to be here should not be here.
And what about somebody, some places in some parts of the world, if somebody's giving birth, they're no longer allowed to have a support person. And in many places, they're allowed to have one support person. So if you have a partner, that partner may be able to be with you, but nobody else, like a doula, would be able to join you. What's the situation at Gifford?
We do not allow any additional personnel to include individuals like doulas. Only employees, and it's obviously critically important that we keep our doors open and keep things functioning, but we can't have extra individuals in here.
But there is a partner is allowed for the individual giving birth?
I would have to refer back to the policy that OB put out. I believe there is one.
Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for people who may be about to have a baby? I've seen a lot of people who are feeling fairly panicked that they're bringing this vulnerable new person into the world, and that just feels extra scary.
I completely understand that. Obvious concern for this population because we don't exactly know. That being said, there is no clear data suggesting that it is a particularly bad situation either. And there is a great deal of data suggesting that young children handle this very, very well. So I'm sure that more information will come. That being said, this is something that we do have some indication that those new babies are handling this quite well.
How are you helping to comfort patients who have to come into the hospital? I know, you know, routine procedures are being postponed, but if you break an arm, if you have to have surgery, you know, if you have a ruptured appendix, this could feel like an extra scary time. Are there ways that people are trying to help patients cope?
Yeah, well, actually, this is a big part of the awareness of what we do here in preparing for this, is that we have to maintain capacity to manage chronic illnesses and acute illnesses right along with this. People are not going to stop getting sick. People are not going to stop having problems with their chronic illnesses, their substance abuse disorder, their mental health conditions. And so managing that side by side with this is a big part of our strategy, because ultimately when the surge does come and we get the rush of people sick with COVID, we have to make sure everyone else is taken care of too, or they're just going to add to the numbers. So we are planning for that, preparing for that, and educating our providers. We are not stopping the day-to-day acute things. If it's something that is non-emergent, maybe you have your annual appointment with your primary care provider, and you don't really have any complaints, maybe looking for a refill of your medications, those kind of things can be rescheduled. But if you have something that might become a problem, if it doesn't get taken care of, we very much encourage you to come on in.
You said you're expecting that a big surge. What is the capacity of the hospital, and what is your then sort of flex capacity to expand out into community beds or other ways to treat people?
So we are a critical access hospital, and that's a federal designation. That's 25 inpatient beds. The emergency conditions do allow us to extend beyond that, and we have a staged plan to do so. My anticipation is that our limitation is going to be workforce. Because it's a 25-bed hospital, we staff for 25 beds. We have a certain number of nurses and PAs and NPs and doctors and so on and so forth, and there was not a spare supply of those sitting around for this. We are doing some reshuffling in terms of the staff, moving people here and there to address this, but I expect our limitation is going to be based on that.
Yeah, the governor has mentioned relaxing some of the regulations, which would include things like allowing people who have certifications or the ability to work in other states in the healthcare field being able to come and work here. But it seems like if everybody in every state is trying to get more people when they don't really have a supply, that's not going to help us much. Is that your scenario?
Yeah, I think that's that's likely. The reality is that when this hits, everybody in the region is going to be hit with the same problem, and so our expectation is we're going to have to handle most things ourselves with relatively little help, with the exception of the surrounding community. And I will say the community has already been great. We're receiving donations of industrial N95 masks and such already, so we'll make do.
We got a note from Mary in Jericho who says, does the rural nature of Vermont make it easier or harder for hospitals if there's a surge of coronavirus patients?
Actually, I think the rural nature of Vermont is going to help us. In terms of social distancing, we were halfway there before any of us had ever heard of coronavirus. When you look at the numbers of sick patients coming out of places like Wuhan, China, and they talk about, 10,000 patients, 20,000 patients, 30,000 patients. There aren't cities in Vermont that really reflect those kind of volumes. And so that's going to be an advantage in this case. I think we also have an impressive mentality in the average Vermonter, that people care about each other and people are respectful, and you're going to have when we ask for things like social distancing, I think we're going to do better in Vermont than other places.
Well, speaking of which, we got a note from Donna who just wrote in to say, my boyfriend lives with one other family member about 35 miles away. We visit each other on weekends. We're both over 65. Should we still visit each other just driving back and forth?
No, you should not. And this is an important thing to understand about social distancing, is it should, as a general rule, not be fun, unless you were a pretty extreme introvert. That means no play dates. That means no, drinks with friends or dinner with friends. Those are the kind of connections that allow this virus to spread. Basically, the only people you should be interacting with are your family that you live with, and chance interactions when you're forced to do something like go to the grocery store, or if you work in a place like a hospital, the people around you there.
Dr. White, it's Monday. Things seem to change so quickly. We're doing sort of an update every Monday because over the weekend things have changed so fast. Are there things that you want people to be aware of as we enter this, new week of change and hardship and in some cases fear and in some cases sickness?
So we are just in the beginning of this here in Vermont, and based on patterns, our numbers are following what was expected. In the next couple of weeks, this is going to get significantly worse. And I don't say that to alarm people, but to prepare them. This is a highly transmissible illness, and people are transmitting it before they realize they're sick. And so the numbers are going to go up, and they've been doing what we expect. The need to social distance is going to maintain and continue for at least a couple of months. People should prepare to burn through all their Netflix. It's going to get pretty boring for a lot of people, but that's a good thing because boring for you means, you know, somebody's grandparents are going to survive that otherwise may not have.
Yeah, boring and perhaps some pretty extreme hardship for people who are out of jobs and otherwise trying to deal with scenarios in which, you know, social distancing is creates different kinds of problems. But I really appreciate you being on with us today in, again, a busy week for everybody to help us sort through some of these questions, Dr. White.
It's been my pleasure.
Joshua White is Chief Medical Officer at Gifford Medical Center in Randolph.